Welcome to another episode of The World Etc. with Colm O'Regan in association with Trocra. And this month, I've left the studio and I'm having a cup of tea with one of my favourite people, actually. It's Deirdre O'Kane. Deirdre, the last time I was talking to you, we were backstage, not to drop names or anything, but backstage at the Three Arena.
We drop our own. Right?
Exactly. We leave them out, I think, in that sense. There were 6,000 people in the Three Arena and they were all laughing and it was a very special gig, one close to your heart. What were we doing there and why?
That was our comic relief gig, Paddy's Day for Comic Relief, which was our third arena gig, which brought us past the €600,000 mark for comic relief. And a chunk of that happily went to Trocra and followed the money out to Palestine, to Gaza and all the rest of it. But yes, so that's what that event was. And there were 16 comics on the bill that night, I think. And to think that we actually went on stage for roughly 7 minutes each and could raise $250,000 in a night is something that makes me very happy and proud indeed.
Yeah, and well done on that. Was Gaza and visiting Palestine, was that on your radar when you started Comic Relief?
It so wasn't on my radar. I mean, when I started the Comic Relief, it came from a funny place. You know, I kind of wouldn't have gone there at all, except that there was a bit of crisis going on in my own life. And sometimes when that happens to you, you're inclined to just say yes more easily to mad ideas. It's really Darren Smith, who is my wingman in this. But Darren had been trying to get Comic Relief going for years and just basically not getting it. And then when him and I were working together on something else, he said to me, you know, I want to make this happen. And I've been trying. And I said, I'll help you. But I was in a kind of, sure, look, everyone around me is dying. I might as well, you know, do something. It was one of those moods. It wasn't like, yes, I want to be amazing and do this. It was really, well, I might as well say yes, because everything is just, you know,
it's an underrated underrated motivation for charity, complete fatalism, isn't it? Maybe we should just latch onto that.
I'm telling you just don't know where the good things are going to come from. I was very resistant, but, you know, once I got back, she went off.
And you were off. You went to, as you say, you followed the money. You went off to Gaza, and did you have to be asked twice?
No, I didn't have to be asked twice. I'd like to do that kind of thing. If I was honest, I could probably do it for a living. I'd quite like to. I'd like to be Melinda Gates. I'd like to pull her money and give it all away. So I'm interested, you know, and I wanted to go. I kind of think as well, you can't keep motivating yourself to put the gigs on and to keep asking people, because the hardest thing about putting those shows together is actually asking people to give their time, and even though they're your friends and there's a certain amount of regard for each other, you're asking every, and you're aware that it's everybody's Paddy's night, and other people just think, it's just a night, what's the big deal? It's not just a night. Some people are on the road half the year, and it's another night out of your home, away from your own kids, all the rest of it. So I'm always aware that an ask is an ask, you know? So I think it's helpful to actually get the bigger picture, and it's all very well to read about poverty, and seeing it and being in the thick of it is just important.
What was the experience of getting into Gaza like?
I'd say I got a good 10-minute stand-up material out of it. Even though it was not particularly funny, but you know the way our
armies
work. I've never been to Guantanamo Bay, but I imagine it's similar. It's very strange. It's a huge building, so I didn't expect it to be so massive, but this is the area it's crossing. The reason, of course, it's so big is that it used to be in use before the blockade happened. 40,000 people left Gaza every day to go to work, and now nobody leaves it. A trickle of people go in and out every day. So you've got this massive sort of disused, you know, station. Do you remember when all the sort of security stations in Northern Ireland sort of closed down? You know, we used to remember when they were all vibrant and working, and then they sort of stopped. So it's a bit like that. It's like a run-down hotel. It's kind of sad, you know, because I'm hyper-aware of the fact that people aren't able to leave Gaza and they aren't able to get in. And families are torn apart. People have sisters and brothers who live, you know, in Bethlehem and can't get in to see their families and haven't done for like 18 years. So, yeah, it's a weird, eerie feeling. A lot of security, a lot of questions, guns pointed at you, cameras, barbed wire, and then a big, long walk to Gaza itself. It's very strange.
Were there Gazans going in with you, going about their business at the same time?
Yeah, very, very few. Mostly aid agencies, people like that getting in, and then just the odd, I'd say, person who has permission for whatever reason to business, I'd say. People who are ill, there's no proper hospital care in Gaza. I mean, this is one of the saddest things for all, is that a lot of cancer patients cannot get treatment. I mean, they're literally left. They will not take them, or you get one chance to apply to leave Gaza. So say you were a breast cancer patient and you asked, could you leave because you can't get chemotherapy in Gaza. If they say no, you can't apply again for another year. So people are actually dying because they're dying within the 12 months they've been refused. And you know, stuff like that is happening. You know, like just barbaric, crazy carry on.
Is there a sense where you go through the processing area, then a door opens and then you're in Gaza, and then it's a completely different world to anything you've ever experienced?
It's not like going to Disneyland, but it definitely feels different. What it feels is actually quite freeing. I didn't have a sense of, I wasn't scared. The border crossing is so kind of intimidating that actually once you get into Gaza and you're hanging out with the people, they are just the loveliest, friendliest people on the planet, making the best of this horrendous situation that they're in. But I kind of loved these people very quickly. I really liked them immediately. It was very, very good. It was fun, even though I kind of then went to a refugee camp that was just extraordinary. But there was no military presence. I mean, I kind of thought I might be seeing Hamas people hanging around at once, but I really don't. I didn't see a military presence. Now, ironically, there was very strong military action after a couple of days after I left, but I didn't see it. So it was more relaxed than I expected.
What was your itinerary? What were things that you had to see and had to bear witness to when you were there in order to tell people when you came home?
The first thing was visit the project that we funded, that Comic Relief funded, which was a program that this woman's sister, Bridget Tye, who's an amazing Irish lady, lives, living out there for a long time. She's involved in one of this program where children up to the age of 3 are being treated for intestinal diseases. They have worms and intestinal diseases and malnutrition. I mean, the water situation is just dire. There's just no clean water. Right? That's what's causing the problems. Now, if those aren't treated, you know the way you've got small children now, and we all know worms, they're a pretty common thing. You go to your chemist, you buy a tablet. They just don't have anything to treat them. And if they are left untreated, they can be very dangerous. They can travel to the brain. It can cause all kinds of unimaginable horrors. A simple, simple thing like that. So anyway, 5,000 children were being treated for that, which is a lot. But what kind of killed me was, I wish that that number could be higher, and I wish it could be more, because when I got there, the women with their children had been there since 5 o'clock in the morning, even though the clinic wouldn't open until 8. But they were all so desperate to get this treatment for their child, because they knew there wouldn't be enough for everybody. So first come, first serve. So since 5 o'clock in the morning, they queued to wait to see the doctor and get the treatments, have blood tests to see if they need the treatment, which I think they said 60% of the child with children need the treatment.
Is that a kind of project that more money equals more done? It scales easily. You don't have to bring a lot of stuff into the border. Is that one of those things that would benefit from lots more attention?
Gaza needs a huge injection of money. I mean, they're surviving. There's no work. So the whole system, like something's going to give very soon in Gaza. I don't know what's happening. I'm afraid to think what will happen, because the UN has said it would be uninhabitable by 2020. It would no longer be the place to live in. And we're in 2019. And you can kind of see the infrastructure is breaking down. Once the water system starts to break down, my fear would be that they'd have an outbreak of cholera. Something awful is going to happen. There's too many people in too small a space. And look, everything you do is a help, but it feels like sticking plasters, you know. And I'm genuinely worried for them. And how they live is just... would ruin me.
When you're in a place like that where you see good things happening and almost it's sitting on top of a bed of a fundamental problem, what do you think about that? Is it we have to try what we can fix in front of us. You know, help this child, help this mother, you know, put on this literal or metaphorical bandage for the moment anyway. Is that the kind of the philosophy?
I think you have to do that because that's the only thing that's making their lives horrible.
Yeah.
You know, and if you don't treat those children now and those diseases get worse, and they do have brain trauma, what are you going to have that on your conscience? I can't solve the political problem. They can't solve the political problem. It is so different and complicated. And at the moment, the Palestinians are divided. And that's the worst thing of all, because they've got to unite to try and find an end to this situation. But in the meantime, you can't turn the backs on them. You've got to do it. You've got to do whatever you can. Yeah. And particularly when you see those endless mothers just trying to make lives for their children and the frustration. I mean, nobody wants to survive on aid. Nobody wants to live like that. Everybody wants to work and look after their family. But that taken away from you is a great injustice, probably the biggest, the worst injustice that can happen. And no freedom to travel out of it. There's not even any hope. There's not like, okay, you know what? If one member of this family works and makes enough money, maybe we can get you out.
You said you fell in love with them, that they were lovely people. What keeps them going? Obviously, they have the fundamental problems they have. When you're, say, having the chats with them, but what's it like interacting with people under that kind of duress?
Ironically, I think the people that I met, a lot of people that I met, there are very ready to laugh. They need, it's all they have left. You know, when you're, it's like poverty. I mean, the one thing that is kind of in their favor is that so many of them are in the same boat. I always think that being poor along living right next door to wealth is just awful. Whereas where I was in these refugee camps, they're in it together. And so therefore there's a very healthy community. I mean, for example, this one family that I visited whose child had been so sick, she couldn't speak, and she was so much better, and they treated her, she was so much better, she was very gratifying. But her family, when we went to visit them, the father, which had been her grandfather, he was like the local counselor. He was the fixer. He was the don, you know, the godfather, essentially, because they can't afford to go to court. So when disputes break out amongst them, going to court is not an option anymore. Nobody can pay any fee, they can't pay anyone. So they basically appoint these sort of wise elders. And he was showing me his garage where he convened, and he would listen to that family, and he would listen to you, and you crashed your car into him, and I'm going to make the decision, and you're going to have to stand by it. So it was really interesting to kind of watch a community go back in time. And I kind of thought, well, you could do with a bit of that. The legal system, you know, so
a little bit of mediation, yeah. So you went to visit the project, and leaving then, what was that like?
I was sad. I was very conflicted. Yeah, and mostly I was very sad because, as I said, I was worried, genuinely worried for them. And even though there are people who are ready to laugh, there's a deep sadness that you can, is almost tangible, because you can just feel the frustration of a very dignified people who want to work. They just want to work, and there's none. And it's just horrendous. And you want to help, and you feel like you can't, and people are thanking you, and so many people are thanking you. Please don't forget about it. Please come back and, you know, do this again. So grateful to get the treatment for their child, whatever it is. And you're just thinking it's a tiny drop in the ocean, and you just want to do more. So you feel conflicted, and yeah, it's hard.
Would you go back?
I would go back in a heartbeat.
When you think about your time there and you hear the discourse about the Israeli-Palestinian crisis, and you hear the way people talk about this tiny area that you were in for a very short time, and people, I suppose people talk about them as an abstract place, a problem to be fixed, or Gaza as a problem, and it's a thorny issue, or it's a sticking point, and then you were there, you met the people in this, I suppose, you know, prison. How do you feel when you hear those, the way we talk here in the West?
I would have been one of those people, because it's not a conflict that I would have been very knowledgeable about. It's so complicated, and even when you try to educate yourself about this conflict, it's not even easy to wade through a book to try and understand, you know, the history. It goes back so far. But what's very clear, and is what nobody can argue with, is that the Palestinians are even an occupied territory, and they are not treated as equal citizens. There's no argument for that. I mean, they've literally stopped them from travelling down particular roads. It's like, no, you are not allowed to use the M50. You're going to go to the... So most Palestinians, trying to get home from work, will sit in traffic. Palestinians will sit in traffic for 2 hours, and the Israelis will go this way, and they'll come in 40 minutes. I mean, a very, very simple thing like that. And that's just one example. But their lives are disrupted every single day, as they are, as they would be if you were living in an occupied territory. And that has happened. But what is very interesting is that I think they've cut themselves off. You know, so I don't think the Israelis see it. You know, like, for example, when I visited the refugee camp, Jerusalem, was kind of saying, because it was a Spanish teacher who teaches there, showing me this. And I said, can you not take, she teaches Israeli children, I said, can they not be shown what they live in? They live a mile away. Can they be taken to refugee camps to see the other half? They're not allowed. They've put laws in place now so that Israelis are allowed to go into Palestinian areas and vice versa, because it's dangerous. So with the result, they don't see each other. And now there's these walls, this huge wall that's been put up around Bethlehem, pretty much. And I was so shocked when I saw the wall. 20 feet high, barbed wire, and you're just expecting this full spiritual experience, which you can also get by the way. This wall is just extraordinary. So yeah, I don't. I think that they've made life cozy for themselves, and they don't see that they're oppressing them.
And if I was listening to this now, hearing about this for the first time, or being dimly aware of Gaza and it's out there in the Middle East, what should I do? I read about it, or contribute, or put pressure? How do we turn compassion into?
That's a good question. I wish I knew a very good answer, because I'm so disappointed that the UN have managed to do so little. Because I kind of think, this is your territory, guys. This is what we hired you not to do. You need to fix this. I just don't know. They need new leaders. Who can you support? You can voice your support for the Palestinians. If you're Madonna, you could choose not to perform. You know, they're the people who can make big statements. You know, I think Messi not playing a football game like a year or two ago was massive. And I do think there's at the moment a more awareness than there has been for quite a long time. I think there is a greater call in favour of the Palestinians. I'm not entirely sure why it suddenly has become more prevalent. I mean, I just kind of feel that poverty is the source of all evil, you know. And we all have to do our bit. And I think if you have a voice, if you have a public voice, you kind of have a duty to use it, is my opinion. Obviously, not everybody's comfortable with that, but I kind of feel so many of these people are voiceless, and they have no way of getting their message out there. And so many of us can actually get some media attention. We can say something that can throw a bit of light on it, explain the situation, help in some way. So I think more than ever, I feel, as I'm getting really old, that you know, I just do have a duty to do whatever the hell you can, because there's a lot, the world is in a state of chaos. Like, there's a lot of mess around us, and we've caused it, and we've caused an awful lot of it. Now, this focus on, there was a brilliant, the good thing about the wall that they put up in Bethlehem is that they've got the most amazing graffiti, and the Banksy Hotel is directly opposite, and it's called the Walled Off Hotel. So clever. Anyway, the graffiti was amazing, and you could kind of feel this. I love art. It's bloody hell, artists are great. You know, the art on the wall, and you can just kind of feel the surge of the good people fighting the good fight, you know. But I mean, like, the sadness of this situation is that there are wrongs on both sides. You know, there have been Israelis have been killed too, you know, and all conflict, you know, there's casualties in every.
Well, you're home now anyway, and ready to fight the good fight across a number of fronts.
So grateful that I went. I think true pleasure is over.
Deirdre, thank you very much for joining me. You were listening to The World Etc. with Colm O'Regan in association with Trokra. And my thanks once again to Deirdre O'Kane, who you were listening to there talking about her recent trip to Gaza.
desire.